Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, to ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
We are live Thursday night, 7 o'clock p.m. the 5th of July, 2012. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Hour of Truth, and I am Dave. We're here thanks to Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Missouri Grassroots Coalition is a group that is a cooperative of hundreds and hundreds of Missouri grassroots groups throughout the state, 912 groups, Tea Party groups, Fair Tax groups, you name it, groups, Right to Life groups, groups who frequently get together for a single issue, property rights groups, groups that get together for larger issues, 912 groups, groups that get together to promote and protect the culture of conservatism in America, whatever the group is out there for, whatever the group is out there trying to do, they have a voice. And we are here to coordinate that voice, to help you join that voice with other like-minded people who want to take the country back. Missouri Grassroots Coalition's mission is to take the state back first. We decided finally, and probably belatedly at this last presidential circus, that we were not going to be able to ever fix this problem from the top down. So we're starting at precinct level. Missouri Precinct Project is with us. We're starting at the county level. Christian County Property Rights Group is with us. We're starting at the city level. Lebanon Fair Tax Group is with us. And we're working at the state level. And we are, of course, also working on our state representatives to Washington on both sides of the aisle. We're leaving the president alone. It is our aim, as time goes by, to make the president exactly what he is constitutionally supposed to be, and that is totally irrelevant to your life.
The problem is that the way Bush has done it over the last 8 years is to take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children, driving up our national debt from $5 trillion for the first 42 presidents. Number 43 added $4 trillion by his lonesome, so that we now have over $9 trillion of debt that we are going to have to pay back. $30,000 for every man, woman, and child. That's irresponsible. It's unpatriotic.
That is irresponsible and unpatriotic. If you don't remember that, that was Barack Obama bashing George Bush and blaming George Bush as he ran for president of the United States 4 years ago. It was at that point unpatriotic to have for George Bush, and I agree with Barack Obama, it was unpatriotic and it was irresponsible of George Bush to have added $4 trillion to the national debt during his 8 years, $4 trillion during 8 years, taking us to a $9 trillion national debt, was unpatriotic and irresponsible. Good for you, Barack Obama. You got that right. Now, Our current national debt, this minute, while we speak, $15,836,738,907 and flying up faster than I can keep up. $16 trillion. So George Bush was irresponsible and unpatriotic for adding $4 trillion to the national debt in 8 years, taking us to $9 trillion of debt. What does that say about a president who added $7 trillion in 3 years, taking us to $16 trillion in national debt? And now we have the Supreme Court telling us that we are stuck with the biggest tax hike on the middle class in the history of the United States of America, while the biggest single expense that we have at $800,700,000,000 is Medicare and Medicaid. Second, at $739,109,000,000 is Social Security. A distant third at $675,143,000,000 is defense. After that, in the hundreds of billions comes unemployment, net interest on the debt, and federal pensions. So, of our top six expenditures, one, defense, is the job of the federal government. $15,836,000,000,000. Barack Obama added $7 trillion to the national debt. Now, that's not all. Listen to this, because and I know I played this last week, but I am forever going to keep these two people tied together.
Just one more. I just want to know if the Senate's going to pass a budget anytime soon.
The Senate passed the budget last August. In fact, we did better. I've always complained about the way we did these budget resolutions because they're phony baloney. Every year we pass a resolution, and it doesn't even have force of law. And the appropriators would have just completely ignored it. So last August, for the first time that I've been there, we put it into law for 2 years, the budget for 2 years, and actually 10 years going forward, but legal spending caps for 2 years. And guess what happened this year? The appropriators followed it. For the first time since I've been there. So them telling, this is Fox News and a talking point by the political right, that we haven't passed a budget. We not only passed one, for the first time it's in law, signed by the president, and we must follow it, and it is bringing down spending, and it is bringing down the number of federal employees.
That is Claire McCaskill, if you didn't recognize that voice, telling you that this year, the United States Senate and House of Representatives passed a budget, that it was signed into law by the president, that it is bringing down federal spending, and that it is reducing the number of federal employees. That is Claire McCaskill telling you that they passed a budget, lie, that the president signed it into law, lie, that it is bringing down federal spending, or even any insinuation that they are bringing down federal spending, is a lie, and that they are reducing the number of federal employees is also a lie. Meanwhile, our president, unpatriotically and irresponsibly, our president and Claire, unpatriotically and irresponsibly have the national debt now up $7 trillion since he came to work to $15,836,000,000,000.
I will be held accountable. I've got 4 years. If I don't have this done in 3 years, then there's going to be a one-term proposition.
Make it a one-term proposition. Make him keep his word that he needs to have it done in 4 years, or it's a one-term proposition. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We got a heck of a good show tonight. It's free speech night. You call in on any topic you want to. It is totally free speech night. You call in. You take on the voice of liberty here if you feel so led. You chip in and give us your ideas on what liberty means to you. It's 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835 to participate. This is Liberty Week. This is Free Speech Week. And this is Free Speech Night on Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it. I've got a feeling
that the tide is turning. Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Now, I've got to tell you, that was not really the voice of Patrick Henry. I think somewhere around here I had an actual recording of Patrick Henry's voice at one time, but I've lost that. So that was an actor saying Patrick Henry's speech, the give me liberty or give me death speech, and how timely could that be to what's happened in the last week? Okay, we're gonna go off on a tangent here tonight. I've had some lively discussions with some dear friends who oppose me on this. They're generally politically conservative and deeply embedded in the Republican Party. Most of my friends on the right are. I have very few libertarian friends. And so I have to associate with some people on the right, and I associate with some people on the left. But I've had this discussion recently with my friends on the right about an Article 5 constitutional, a friend of mine, Lloyd Sloan, wants to call it a constitutional prop, but just for the sake of us all saying the same thing, I'm going to call it a constitutional convention. If you are not familiar with U.S. Constitution, first of all, shame on you and get familiar with it. It's a short read. It's not the Bible. It is a page. It is 8 pages long in a fairly decent binding, and it's an easy read. If you're not familiar with the U.S. Constitution, get familiar with it. If you're not familiar with the U.S. Constitution, you are the reason that these chief justices of the Supreme Court and their cronies can continue to trample all over you because you don't get it. You don't have to be a legal scholar to know what the Constitution says. I mean, listen, read the Constitution. And if you do not agree with me when it's done, you get on this show and tell me why. Read the Constitution. And when you read the Constitution, you will understand that you do not need a Supreme Court justice to tell you it's okay for the police to stop traffic on a street and check people to see if they've been drinking. It's not okay. It is not constitutional, and the fact that some Supreme Court justice says it is does not make it so. It's high school civics. Read the damn thing, and you'll see what I mean. But in Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, there are two ways to amend the Constitution, and we've done that in the past. We've amended the Constitution. The Constitution is built by men, and there were some problems with it, and we made some good amendments. We made some bad amendments, but we've made some amendments, and there are two ways to make such an amendment in the future. One is for the Congress, by 2/3 vote, to vote for an amendment to be sent to the states for ratification. And the other is for 2/3 of the states to ask for a constitutional convention. And at that constitutional convention, the states could propose amendments, and then those amendments would go to the states for ratification. Either way that an amendment finds its its way to the states for ratification. And if you're as old as me, you remember a couple of these amendments flying out. None of them succeeded in my lifetime. It takes 3/4 of the states to ratify an amendment. Now, let's see. That's 38 states. So 38 states to ratify an amendment. So here it goes. Congress proposes an amendment. They have to have 2/3 in both houses for that amendment to head out to the states the way it's worded, headed out. The states don't get to make any changes to it. They just get to say yes or no in the various state legislatures. If 38 states say yes, then that amendment becomes forever a piece of the Constitution. That ain't going to happen, folks. That ain't going to happen. This Congress has not made a budget in 4 years. They haven't even lived with a budget in 4 years. And they haven't made a balanced budget in more than 10 years. There have been cries for a constitutional amendment, for a balanced budget, I know for at least the last 10 years. And the legislature has ignored you. So it's time, in my opinion, to get this constitutional convention going. It's time for 2/3 of the states to ask the federal government for a constitutional convention. Congress would then set the date and time and place for the constitutional convention, and each state would send a number of delegates. This isn't a wide open forum where 10 million people stand out in a field in Ohio and everybody talks at the same time trying to get what they want. There are delegates sent. Now, my cronies who are opposed to this are afraid of what they call a runaway convention. There is terrible, terrible fear on the right of the left. And it's understandable. The left is dishonest. The left is deceitful. The left is covert in the way they try to do things. Look at the way Obamacare passed. If you want to talk about covert, go back and study the way it passed in the Senate, of course, and then went to the House of Representatives, and it passed there in the middle of the night without a vote on a reconciliation, as a reconciliation measure. So, yeah, there is ample reason on the right to distrust the left. But these folks feel like once this constitutional convention gets there, we would have all kinds of Obamacare amendments and welfare amendments and same-sex marriage amendments and abortion amendments and all kinds of amendments, basically socializing and destroying the freedom and the liberty that we all love. And that ain't going to happen either. It just isn't. You might get an amendment come out of a constitutional convention that would say every state must accept same-sex marriage. You might get a 2/3 vote out of a constitutional convention that would say that. You will not get 38 states to agree to it. My friends on the left, and I haven't talked to them about a constitutional convention, but I can tell you right now they're just as scared of it, or they'd have pushed for it, and they'd have tried to get those amendments out there because they're dishonest, they're deceitful, and they're covert. But what they fear is that there will be abortion amendments, that there will be same-sex marriage amendments, that there will be clearer definitions of the Second Amendment and the First Amendment that they don't like, that there might be a fair tax in there, and the left definitely doesn't want a fair tax. there might be. It might be that you would come out of the Constitutional Convention with an amendment that says no state is allowed to recognize a same-sex marriage. It could be on the way outside that you could get two-thirds of the delegates at the convention to agree to send that amendment out to the states. There is no way, no way you're going to get 38 states to say that's okay. So I say bring this convention on. Bring it on. If you don't say 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835 if you disagree. I use a little support if you do agree. Bring it on. I say, from the Libertarian Center here, where I don't want to see the rights theocracy, and I don't want to see the less totalitarianism, I say the time in the history of the United States since its founding has not been riper for fair taxes, state rights issues, the state's repeal amendment, items like that that put the power of this government back where it belongs, that makes the president irrelevant, that makes our legislative body the place where laws and rules and regulations are passed, that trims the bureaucracy of our country. I say that the time is ripe for getting those kind of amendments out of that convention and to getting three-fourths of the states, 38 states, would get behind almost any states' right amendment. 38 states right now would get behind a state repeal amendment. I'm going to take a sidetrack here because we're going to talk about the state repeal amendment on Monday. Lloyd Thomas Sloan, the expert in state repeal amendment, is coming along. He spent a lot of time studying this. He spent a lot of time preaching this state repeal amendment. And this is an example of the kind of thing that I swear to you we could get out of a constitutional Article 5 constitutional convention and would sail through 38 states in a flash. So runaway convention, not going to happen. Bring it on. Bring on your constitutional convention, and I will bet you money right now that you on the left and you on the right can't find 38 states for a single one of your crazy notions, and that I'll bet you the same amount of money that right here in the middle we can find 38 states in a heartbeat that will get behind fair tax, that will get behind states' rights amendments, that will get behind anything that returns the power of this country back to where our founders wanted it to be. We're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Obamacare.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
With the August primary looming in about 7 weeks, we find the time is running out on who we vote for. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Do the representatives we send to Jefferson City really care what you think, or do they do the bidding of the special interest groups and lobbyists? It's your choice. You can elect a true citizen legislator or an establishment politician who takes his marching orders from the party elitists and his donors. Either way, time is running out for our state and country. Hear the clock of freedom ticking? I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're live.
The problem is,
there he is again.
The way Bush has done it over the last 8 years is to take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children, driving up our national debt from $5 trillion for the first 42 presidents. Number 43 added $4 trillion by his lonesome, so that we now have over $9 trillion of debt that we are going to have to pay back. $30,000 for every man, woman, and child. That's irresponsible. It's unpatriotic.
It is, in fact, unpatriotic. George Bush added $4 trillion to the national debt. Listen to this. $3,839,000,000,000. $4 trillion, the amount Bush added to the national debt. Our interest in 2012. Our interest in 2012. $3,839,000,000,000. You want to talk about unpatriotic, talk about that. 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835. Get in here. There's a thing out there that the Supreme Court said was okay, and it's called Obamacare. And I don't care a hoot if the Supreme Court said it was all right. It's not. And I don't care a hoot if the Republicans didn't repeal it in the last session, because it is deader than a doornail. No thanks to Chief Justice Roberts, it's deader than a doornail. And no thanks to the Republican majority in the House of Representatives, it's deader than a doornail. It is deader than a doornail. And the death blow will come in November. Listen, look at the realities of the political landscape here. In every recent poll, those leaning left and those leaning right polls, Americans think Obamacare is bad. Now, depending on whether the poll leans left or the poll leans right, you're going to get a number anywhere from 59 to 78%. When they narrow that down to independents, you're going to get a number, depending on whether the poll leans left or the poll leans right, between 60 and 80%. 60 and 80% of the independents who will decide this election think Obamacare is a bad thing. And that number is only going to grow. It is over for Obamacare. Now, people will say Romney doesn't really want to do it. And they'll say that it's going to be hard to get the Congress. I mean, the Republicans wouldn't do it this term. It's going to be hard to get the Congress, even though both sides now will be dominated by Republicans, to repeal it. And I say, balderdash. We are going to be looking at such a landslide in this election. We're going to be looking at a mandate landslide. And I'm saying 26 points. 26 points. That's what I'm going to say. I went out on a limb on July 5th, 2012, and I said that this election will be 26 points or greater difference. And what I'm talking about is this, folks. There was a huge, huge demographic that voted for Obama in the last election, and that was young people. Now, listen, these young people, they are the ones who are absolutely screwed, and they know it. They're seeing it happen right in front of their eyes. There is a large contingent of these young people who chose, who could afford insurance, and who are healthy enough that they could get insurance, but who chose not to buy insurance. In fact, when you say, whether you're on the left or the right, X number of people chose, could have afforded insurance, but chose not to buy it, you are talking about these young people. You remember, you were 20 once, you were never going to get sick, you were never going to die, you were never going to go to the doctor, you were never going to be in the hospital, you were never going to have a car wreck, you were never going to have a heart attack, and you didn't need health insurance. There was no reason why you'd ought to pay $347 a month for something you're never going to need. That group of people who overwhelmingly supported Barack Obama are now the ones who are being told you must spend $348 a month for health insurance, or you must pay a $647 a year tax, the largest single tax hike on the middle class, on people making under $100,000 a year, the single largest tax hike in American history. Those people are not going to vote for Barack Obama. And then there's a group that is still in that young demographic. And that is the group of people who work at McDonald's or work at Walmart, work at any burger joint, work at the car wash. They have a wife. Maybe they have a baby. They make a little bit above minimum wage to slightly above minimum wage. They make too much money. The baby probably is on Medicaid, but they make too much money to qualify for Medicaid. They don't go to the doctor. And they voted for Obama because they thought, until recently, that this Obamacare was a good thing. Well, wake up. Wake up, burger flipper. Wake up, car wash jockey. Nothing's coming. You are not going on Medicaid. You are now being told that you need to leave the iPhone. You need to leave behind your cable TV. You need to leave behind your next vacation because you are going to pay $358 a month for health insurance, or you are going to participate in the largest tax hike on people making under $40,000 in the history of the United States of America. Your penalty, your tax, is going to be $647, just like anybody else who decides not to pay $348 a month for insurance. You don't have to pay the tax. You can pay $348 a month for insurance. But Obama isn't buying you insurance. He isn't giving you coverage. He is telling you, you have to buy coverage. That guy ain't going to vote for Obama either. Now, there's another huge demographic that went heavily, heavily for Barack Obama, and that is the middle-class wage earner. And again, I'm stuck here because I don't know what else to say. The mid-income wage earner, the people who keep the country running. All right, I hate to use middle class because that is a leftist term. The leftists are into class warfare. I don't like to talk about classes. We aren't classes. This isn't a caste system. We don't live in India. So Bill Gates isn't in one class and me in another class and some homeless guy out there in another class. The wage earner, the $80,000 to $130,000 wage earner, now he falls in one of two categories as well, just like the young guys. He either has employer insurance, he's insured by his employer, and so he's happy. He probably voted for Obama because as a middle-income wage earner, he's been raised to believe that social justice means that instead of feeding the poor and healing the sick through his own charity, that he can just excuse himself from that by donating a little bit to the government. And he believes that everyone is entitled to the same health care that he's working hard for, whether they work hard for it or not. So he voted for Obama. But what's going to happen to him is he's going to wake up one morning in the very, very near future and find that his company is no longer buying him insurance. Maybe they bought it all. Maybe he paid half of $348. And he's going to find himself in the same boat as that young fella out there. He's going to find that his choice is now $348 a month for insurance, or pay the biggest tax increase on people making under $200,000 in the history of the United States of America. That's his penalty if he doesn't pay $348 a month to buy insurance. And then there's another subgroup in that demographic. And that is the person who can't afford insurance, he's either self-employed or he works for an employer who doesn't provide him insurance. And he's going to be told to either buy insurance or pay the biggest tax hike in the history of people earning under $50,000 a year. And he's not going to vote for President Obama. So I'm telling you right now, this is going to be a landslide. Obama has gained no new loyalties while he's been in office, and he has lost more than half of those who voted for him last time. And when I say he's lost, he's just about totally lost the independents. I don't think Mitt Romney can drop his drawers enough on the podium to not get the independent vote. They'll either stay home or they'll vote for Romney. And now we are talking, when we talk about this group over here, these two demographics that voted overwhelmingly for Obama, we are talking about liberals, and he has lost them completely. That is why Barack Obama wants to change this discussion quickly. He wants to say, okay, the Supreme Court has decided this discussion is over, let's move on. But we have to keep this thing centered on what's important, and that is this piece of landmark legislation and this Supreme Court decision that forever changed the United States of America. Now, I've got a caller here who asked, not a caller, a texter, who asked, what makes me think that Joe Jones is going to wake up and his steel mill has decided not to insure him anymore? Well, it's simple, because it's the same principle as the guy who can afford insurance and decided not to buy it. It is this $348 a month is $4,176 a year. Let's say that for buying a group policy, that the steel mill gets a significant discount. Let's say that the steel mill pays $3,100. Let's say that they get $1,000 per employee discount on this insurance policy. So they pay $3,100 a year per employee. And I'll even give you that $3,100 may cover the entire family. The penalty for that company, if they don't buy insurance, if they don't put up with the hassles of keeping up with the benefit payments, if they don't put up with the hassles of having to do all the accounting and holding back all the money out of people's paychecks and keeping up with all the changes in the insurance policy year to year, if they don't put up with all that headache, the reward for not putting up with all that headache is a penalty of $2,000 per employee. Do the math, folks. They are saving for not putting up with all that headache, for not putting up with all the accounting, for not putting up with all of the comparison shopping year after year after year, for not putting up with all that hassle. They are being rewarded $1,100 a year per employee. Currently, they're going to pay $3,100 a year per employee. Their penalty for not doing so is $2,000 a year per employee. What do you think is going to happen? No, most employers won't do that. I was talking to a liberal friend the other day, and I said this, and they said, well, no, most companies wouldn't do that. This is the same person who spends an inordinate amount of time walking around the country talking about the evil, greedy, corrupt corporations. No, they're not going to do that. They're going to keep those policies because what? Because they love their people and so much that they're going to pay them an extra $1,100 a year in insurance premiums? Hell no. No, I don't even call them evil corporations for saving $1,100 per employee per year. And you call them evil corporations for not giving their employees a 15-minute smoke break instead of a 10-minute smoke break, and you think they're going to keep this policy. No, you don't think so. You're just saying so so that Obamacare doesn't sound quite as bad as it really, really is. If this thing isn't killed, it's going to be bad, but it's going to be killed. The margin of victory in November is going to be so great that Romney and the new Republican-led House and Senate will not dare not carry out the mandate given to them by the people. It's going to be that bad for everybody.
Just one more. I just want to know if the Senate's going to pass a budget anytime soon.
The Senate passed the budget last August. In fact, we did better. I've always complained about the way we did these budget resolutions because they're phony baloney. Every year we pass a resolution and it doesn't even have force of law. And the appropriators would have just completely ignored it. So last August, for the first time that I've been there, we put it into law for 2 years, the budget for 2 years, and actually 10 years going forward, but legal spending caps for 2 years. And guess what happened this year? The appropriators followed it. For the first time since I've been there. So them telling, this is Fox News and a talking point by the political right, that we haven't passed a budget. We not only passed one, for the first time it's in law, signed by the president, and we must follow it, and it is bringing down spending, and it is bringing down the number of federal employees.
What a liar.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had enough. If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
The tide is turning. 347-677-1835 if you want to be a part of that turning tide, or 347-677-1835 if you want to try to stop it from happening. We're here to help. Listen to this number. $15,826,000,000. 15,826. That is the total personal debt of the citizens of the United States of America. That is you and me and every other citizen. That's our mortgage. That's our car payment. That's our credit cards. That's every bit of debt that we owe. 15.8. 15.8 is also the amount of money that the United States government owes. Now, go figure. The United States government owes to foreign bodies and to its own citizens and to itself as much money as all of our mortgages, our car payments, our credit cards, our department store debt, every penny that we owe our parents or our loved ones, all of the debt that you and I have is exactly equal, $15.8 trillion, to all the national debt. Okay, here we go. We're gonna revisit a topic on the 4th of July that is as old to this country as the debates at the Constitutional Convention. As the debates in the Continental Congress. This thing has been going on for 236 years. and is going to go on for another 236, God willing, because we come out of this Obamacare thing and we restore some semblance of liberty that allows us to go on for another 236. We've got two groups now who have actually come out and given themselves names. They are the Christian Right and the Christian Left. The Christian Right has given them gave themselves a name several decades ago, actually. The end of the name has changed. The Moral Majority, the Vocal Majority, the 700 Club, the 912, the Glenn Beck Gospel Hour, whatever you want to call it. It is a group of people who believe that Thomas Jefferson's wall of separation between church and state. Oh, yeah, you on the right. Wake up if you don't know this. The wall of separation between church and state is not some liberal pinko commie slogan that was hatched up in the 50s just to shut you out. It was a phrase coined by Thomas Jefferson, the drafter of the Declaration of Independence, the writer of the Declaration of Independence. So these are a group of people, this Christian Right, who believes that Jefferson's wall of separation between church and state is something that was built to keep the left from having anything to do with the government. Now, it's okay. It's okay for them to federally ban abortion, to federally say that marriage is between a man and a woman, to federally say that all of these things are the way it should be. Now, I have two observations to make for the religious right, for the Christian right. One of those observations is, which one of you, I'm looking at a whole group of people over here, which one, single one of you gets to decide which of the laws are going to be legislated to me? You know, because if you are a Christian, if you are a Christian at all, and not just a righty, you know that abortion is wrong. You know that gay sex is wrong. You know that sex outside marriage is wrong. But you know that divorce is wrong. You know that taking your mom and dad and locking them away in a nursing home because they're inconvenient to your lifestyle is wrong. So where are you going to draw the line? Where are you going to say, well, because God said this is wrong, we need to make it a law? Because my religion said this is wrong, we need to make this a law for Christian and non-Christian alike. Everybody's got to agree that this is true because I said so, and I said so because God said so. Where, which one of you over there is going to draw that line for me? Hey, it's Dave. You're on the hour. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going, man? How you feeling?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm actually listening to your show here about the whole politics and whatnot. I said, let me give a call in and express my view on the topic.
Go ahead. Where are you from? New York. I know. I can tell you're from New York.
I'm from Little Italy, New York City.
All right, cool. Go ahead. What's your name? What's your name?
My name's Paul.
Paul. Hey, Paul. I'm Dave. Yeah, go ahead. Give it to us.
Basically, you know, with this whole upcoming election, I see the candidates unfit, the ones that are coming up. First of all, Obama, never was a fan of his. I don't believe he's the type of individual we need at that position. And he's basically, if you actually read his book, came out of a book before he was actually a politician. And he made a lot of racist statements towards white individuals. And you could actually look at that book. It's at Barnes & Noble's. You can actually buy, I think it's like $19. And he made like the whole book's about just racism towards whites.
Something of my father, right? Something of...
Yes. That's
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's just really bad. And then you've got another candidate like the Romney guy, who's just basically too wealthy to be a president. He never had a hard time. He came up on basically his parents were loaded. He became loaded, and he's a trust fund baby. He doesn't really understand how people work hard to get what they need to be. You know, and both candidates, I feel, you know, no disrespect to Dave, but I feel that, you know, they're not candidates for us. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I agree, Paul. I was a Herman Cain guy, and I was behind Herman Cain, and I was brokenhearted when what happened to him happened to him, and I said at that time that I was done with the whole presidential thing. I said that I would vote for whoever the American people selected in the primary process to beat Barack Obama, because I am that terrified that 4 more years of Barack Obama ruins this country forever. Mm-hmm. And I said at that time that I was going to vote for whoever you. I would have voted for Ron Paul if that's who they selected to beat Barack Obama. I'd have held my nose just like I will with Mitt Romney, and I'd have voted for Michelle Bachmann if that's what it took. But I agree with you 100%, except for the fact that I dislike Romney for other reasons. I dislike Romney more for his politics. You know, I think Romney Care was a bad thing. I think a lot of the flip-flop, I think Romney's flip-flop on life, and I don't care where you stand on life, but pick a position and stick to it. You know, so I disagree. As far as being too rich, geez, I mean, except for Bill Clinton, Paul, every president that we've had since Abraham Lincoln has fit that mold.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean, you know, this is a situation that, you know, do you notice at the local levels, there's guys who don't really have money who are coming up in the politics, but you never see them at the national level, you only see them at the local levels.
Right.
What's wrong with the system? The system's broke and needs to fix.
I agree. And that's, I'll tell you, down here in Missouri, that's what we're all about here at the Missouri Grassroots Coalition. And thanks for tuning in from New York. I'm not saying that we're not going to get involved in national politics, but what I am saying is that we are never going to fix this thing from the top down. I decided that this year, and probably 10 or 20 years too late. If we're going to fix this thing, if we're going to make it right, we're going to start at the precinct, and then we're going to work our way up to the city and to the county, and we're finally going to get enough states together who say, no, you know, here's the Constitution, this is our territory, you stay the hell out of it, and that's the only way we're going to do it. And when we do that and do it right, we will reduce the president to exactly what the Constitution says he's supposed to be, and that is totally irrelevant to our lives. The president is supposed to deal treaties with foreign countries. He's supposed to be the commander-in-chief of the military, and that's just about it as far as we're concerned down here in our day-to-day lives.
Definitely, I understand. You know, like in this particular situation, you know, you had Bush, who was not the best of presidents. He was subpar president, to be honest with you.
Yes.
And he wasn't really a smart guy, to be quite frank, you know. And then we had Obama, who basically, you know, his individual was racist, and I don't see how in the whole America could benefit from a racist president.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And not only is he racist, but he is a hardcore socialist. I'm not talking about a left-leaning liberal. I'm talking about the man is a hardcore socialist who read and studied after the hardest hardline communists.
Definitely. You know, I mean, just a situation where I see it as no matter who, either one of the parties getting elected, we're going to have another bad term or whatever, you know.
I agree. I've said so right from the start. And the only thing that I see going for, and I'm a libertarian, Paul, in case you don't listen very often, so I have as much distaste for Republicans as I do for Democrats as a general rule. But the only thing I see is I am terrified. I am terrified that another 4 years of Barack Obama, I mean, as rapidly as he has doubled the national debt. And now he's asking for another lift in the debt ceiling. He has introduced the largest tax increases, in, regardless of what he said he was going to do. I mean, forget Obamacare. Do you smoke? I don't know if you smoke or not, but it doesn't matter whether you smoke. Who pays the cigarette tax? The people that he promised he wasn't going to raise taxes on.
Yeah, so, definitely, you know, I mean, personally, me, myself, I'm a smoker, and prices have went up. You know, I've been smoking for around 15 years already. You know, it's been a while, to be honest with you, but, you know, realistically speaking, you know, the cigarettes went up, everything's going up, and as cutbacks at work, you know, I mean, realistically, I have a good job. You know, I'm in the management position, but even as a manager, I took a big cut, paying cut this year.
Yep.
Because there was huge layoffs, and they would say, you know, either you're going to take a little bit of a cut or you're going to go. And I said, I'll take the cut because, you know, I'd rather not lose my job and try to find another management job. It's going to be tough. You know, it's a bad market.
Absolutely.
But, you know, so I took the cut. But basically, you know, we should have a president like guys trying to, for instance, out of New York. Like, you know, Rudy Giuliani, great guy. You know, I met with the guy in the past. We had actually a couple of drinks a couple of years ago. He was a real nice guy, and he was down to earth, and he's tough on crime, and he's tough on corruption. That's the type of guy we need up in there.
That is absolutely the kind of guy we need. That is absolutely the kind of guy we need, because one of the number one problems in our country is the amount of fornication going on between the government and corporations, and the corruption at that level.
Definitely, you know. I mean, just, you know, the type of guys who are really, like, hard-nosed type guys, you don't really see them run for president. If they do try to run for president, someone shuts them down. So, I mean, you know, you basically got Kate, you know, like, guys who are, like, have special agendas or special, you know, situations with you know, third parties that basically they benefit from that. That's the people you see who are really up there because they get the most money for their campaigns, you know.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And that's what I was talking about, Paul, when I said we're going to have to start this from the local level because the party, quote unquote, had selected Romney before the thing even started. I mean, we didn't really even have a say, did we?
No, I don't think so, no.
Yeah, that's right. And what happened is one after one, and it started with my guy, Herman Cain. He was the first one down, and I'm going to say that the Republicans as well as the Democrats had everything to do with his demise. I don't know. I don't believe for a minute half of the things that were said about him simply because they all just went away when he dropped out. You can't find one of those women now. Not a one of them will talk about it anymore. They got what they wanted out of it. And so I don't believe it to start with. But if it was true or not, the Republicans had as much to with keeping it going as the Democrats.
Definitely, you know. I mean, realistically, you know, if you look at different situations, especially like, you know, you said you're in a different part of the states than I am. You know, I'm in NYC, but over here in NYC, like, you know, there's certain areas where realistic people are getting free housing who really don't qualify for free housing. You know, I see people working and they're getting free housing from, because they're, you know, minority groups or whatnot. And that started happening when Obama went into presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure what that means. I mean, is there a new program for people who are, you know, the same race as he is? Who knows? But, you know, I'm not racist or anything like that. I just don't like to see, you know, certain individuals getting a better shake at things than I do. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. And the fact of the matter is that the group that ought to be maybe more pissed off at him than you and me are African Americans. Because he has decimated the African American community when it comes to joblessness. He has decimated the African American community when it comes to making them dependent on the government. I mean, it's shameful the way he's treated the African American community.
not realistically, you know, according to some polls, that he really doesn't have a chance of winning though this time around. A lot of people saying, you know, on like the forums and whatnot, because sometimes I like to, you know, I read the paper online sometimes when I have like early shift, early morning shift, and, you know, it's like forums where people like write in and stuff. And a lot of people saying they're not really liking Obama too much, you know?
Right. No, I think, and like I said, it's my opinion, and I don't, I hesitate to say this, and I wrote this in a blog today, and I had a friend of mine say, I agree with you, but I hate that you wrote that down. Because the last thing I want us to do, brothers and sisters, is get complacent and think that because this is going to be a landslide, we can stay home, because it's only going to be a landslide if we don't stay home. But I believe that this isn't even going to be close, Paul.
You know, he did a bad job, to be honest with you, and the guy before him, he didn't do a too good job either, you know?
Oh, no, I was definitely not a Bush guy, by any means. I was as hard on Bush as I have been on Obama.
No, realistically, you know, Bush Senior, his father, he did a decent job, to be honest with you. Just, you know, the Bush Junior did a horrible job. You
he
know?
Did. He did. Yep. Okay, what else you got for us, Paul?
That's why I called in, to just, you know, put my two cents into the topic and whatnot.
Thanks for calling. I'll tell you, my Cardinals are going to come down there in the World Series and whip your Yankees' ass.
Nah, you know what? I'm going to tell you the truth. You know, I'm a diehard Yankees fan, and I would love to see Jeter get another ring this year, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Definitely go Yankees, you know what I'm talking about.
Good call, Paul. Thanks. Call back again sometime.
That sounds good. Have a good day.
We'll see you. That was Paul from New York City calling in to let us know that he's kind of in agreement with the things that we said tonight. You could tell that Paul was from New York City pretty much by the way he talked, couldn't you? So anyway, then there's this group that calls themselves the Christian Left. And listen, Christian Left, and many of my dearest friends are on this quote-unquote Christian Left. You're either a Christian or you're not. And if you are a Christian, I mean a follower of Christ, you know as well as I do that abortion is wrong. And you know as well as I do that marrying someone of the same sex is wrong. If you are a Christian and you know that having sex outside marriage is wrong, if you are a follower of Christ, and you also know quite rightly that it is the job of us to feed the poor, to heal the sick, to shelter the homeless, to clothe the children. That's our job. So where do you come off, just like my brothers and sisters on the right, telling me that the government's job is to enforce your Christian moral on everyone else, Christian and non-Christian, and just like my brothers and sisters on the right say, well, but it's this Christian moral that we have to enforce, and we're not going to enforce the gay thing and the abortion thing and the, you know, both of you, just listen to yourselves. Standing there pointing your fingers at each other saying, that person's not a Christian, this person's not a Christian, because they believe that we ought to, I don't want to even talk about that anymore, but, you know, brothers and sisters, it's all or nothing. And I go to the left and to the right. You're both trying to enforce your brand of Christianity on everyone in the country, whether it be feed the hungry, heal the sick, clothe the children. Don't give me that that's just what good people do, because that isn't what good people do. That kind of philosophy is not the philosophy of the majority of the major religions on this earth. It is your philosophy as a Christian that it is your job to feed the poor, shelter the homeless. That is your Christian ethic. And you are trying to push that on me by stealing my money so that you can decide which hungry get fed, and you can decide which homeless get sheltered. I am plenty capable of doing my Christian duty to the best of my ability to feed the poor, shelter the homeless, and you keep it out of my government. On the right, Who are you to say that these people on the left are unchristian because they want to steal your money to carry out God's work, while you sit over there trying to enforce at a federal level a Defense of Marriage Act and a School Prayer Act and push your religion down my throat? Now, I'm telling you, I'm a Christian. I'm a born-again Christian. I am a follower of Christ. And I'm going to leave all of that finger-pointing and deciding whose religion gets enforced by the government to you on the left and right. What I'm going to tell you both, though, is that if every one of you spent a little bit more time trying to make this a nation of Christians, and a little bit less trying to make it a Christian nation, we wouldn't have any poor people. I mean, if we were, instead of a Christian nation, a nation of Christians, we wouldn't have any more homeless people. We wouldn't have any more abortions. So, take your pick. Take your pick between a nation of Christians that runs its law independent of your religion, or a Christian nation where you can fight with your own supposed brothers and sisters in the fellowship of Christ as to which Christian values we're going to enforce. Now we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to give you a little bit of insight into what's coming up on Missouri Grassroots Radio.
With the August primary looming in about 7 weeks, we find the time is running out on who we vote for. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Do the representatives we send to Jefferson City really care what you think, or do they do the bidding of the special interest groups and lobbyists? It's your choice. You can elect a true citizen legislator or an establishment politician who takes his marching orders from the party elitists and his donors. Either way, time is running out for our state and country. Hear the clock of freedom ticking? I'm Terry Varner, and I approve this message.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. We're live. It's Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Hour of Truth, and I'm Dave. 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. I'm pretty much done ranting for tonight, but if you want to weigh in on anything that we've ranted about, or if you've got something that you just want to rant about, you can have 2 or 3 minutes if you want to call up and go at it. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition. The Missouri Grassroots Coalition is a cooperative of small, independent groups throughout the state of Missouri that are absolutely 100% committed to taking this country back one county at a time, one city at a time, one state at a time, and reducing the federal government to what it is supposed to be, and reducing the presidency to irrelevant to our daily lives. All of that stuff is supposed to belong to the state, and now, brothers and sisters of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition and brothers and sisters in the state of Missouri, I want to direct you to the Facebook page, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Go to the group page. Don't go to the fan page. If you've not been there, if you don't already have it bookmarked, go to Facebook and go to just do a search for Missouri Grassroots Coalition. It's three words. It's a group, and you'll find us there. And read down the list of things today, because speaking of state sovereignty, there is an important legislative initiative that passed this last session that put on the ballot proposition. I want to say it's Proposition E, but you'll find it there. Find it in a couple of texts, one started by Lisa Payne Nager and another one thread started by Mike Smith, that basically said the governor and the executive bureaucracy could not, without the consent of the legislature, enter the state of Missouri into any insurance exchanges or go down the road toward Obamacare, that the governor nor the executive branch could just willy-nilly go off on their own and do that, that anything that was done in that direction needed a push by Congress. This gets tricky because we have a socialist Democrat Secretary of State who has worded that ballot language in such a way as to, A, intentionally be confusing, and B, to intentionally be deceitful. What the law does is it denies to the governor, I hate to say the word denies to the governor because that would imply that the governor ever had this right to start with, but it reiterates to the governor that he does not have the right to extend Missouri into this black hole on his own, that only the legislature has the right to extend Missouri into this quagmire of the Affordable Health Care Act. Now, it should be a no-brainer, listen, folks, that it's that way. It should be a no-brainer to both the governor and to you that the executive branch, the bureaucracy of the government, can't just go out, agree to take $50 million from the federal government, agree to extend the state Medicaid program, agree to set up state insurance exchanges. It ought to be a no-brainer to all of us that that is a sovereign duty and an exclusive duty, or a duty exclusively reserved to the legislature. But it's not. It's not a no-brainer to our no-brain governor. He made several attempts to circumvent this year the legislature and to get this done. And because he didn't get it done, now he thinks he can stand up and say he was against the individual mandate all along. He made several attempts to circumvent the legislature and get this done. So go to Missouri Grassroots Coalition on the Facebook and read up, read this ballot language. Rather than saying that the ballot language is that the measure is an intention to deny the governor of usurping the authority of the legislature, it says that if you vote for this, you will be denying Missourians adequate health care. That if you vote yes for this proposition, you will be denying Missourians adequate health care. This Secretary of State, now here's another person that's got to go. This Secretary of State and the Attorney General's got to go because he approved this. These two people are liars, they are cheaters, and they are thieves, because this is the most distasteful and dishonest ballot language I've ever seen in my life. Go read, and you can click to both from, I believe it's Mike Smith's thread. You can click to both the legislation, and it's very simply worded legislation. You can't misunderstand what it says. And then you can click to the ballot language that the Secretary of State wrote, and you will be flabbergasted. I'm telling you, I am believing right now that my most liberal friends, whether they agree with the legislation or not, if they go and read the legislation, and then if they go and read the ballot language, that those people will agree with me that this woman is the lyingest, cheatingest, thievingest person to ever hold a public office. That ballot language is sinful. The Hour of Truth is on Monday and Thursday, on this coming Monday. We have Lloyd Thomas Sloan coming. We're going to talk about the States' Rights Amendment. Lloyd is very learned about this. This is an amendment whose proposition goes all the way back to James Madison. And basically, it allows the states to get together in a certain number and repeal any federal law. Not repeal an amendment, because an amendment isn't a federal law. An amendment becomes part and parcel of the Constitution of the United States. So if the states passed an amendment to balance the budgets, 26 states couldn't then get together and override that. But if the federal government passes a law that says you can't buy incandescent light bulbs, then a certain number of states could get together and say that's not going to be a law. We'll be talking to Lloyd about that for 90 minutes on Monday. He comes well prepared to give us 90 minutes of history and precisely what he's proposing. He's actually throwing a proposal out there that we adopt this and gaining a little bit of steam. On Thursday the 12th, that's a week from tonight, we're going to have Adam Warren. Adam Warren's running for Attorney General to replace that clown that we just talked about a minute ago, Peter Kinder. And we'll be talking to Alan. And then, speaking of Attorney General, on Monday the 16th, 3 days later, we'll be talking to Ed Martin. And we'll also be talking on that night to Mike Moon, who is running to take Billy Long out of the United States House of Representatives. And brothers and sisters, that's something else that badly needs to be done. Billy Long has been an embarrassment. I supported Billy Long, and I'm sorry I did. I apologize for that. I will fight hard here and on the streets with my voice and with the soles of my feet to call Billy Long home. And I say that as a prelude to this. Brothers and sisters of the movement, and when I say movement, I'm talking about this tide-turning thing that we have going here. You can feel it. You can feel it in your bones. But I don't want to call it a Tea Party, because it's not all about the Tea Party. It's about fair taxers. It's about the whole lot of you. But I say to you in the movement that our pass or fail, whether we are going to succeed or whether we are going to fail, is probably going to be decided on August the 7th. Now, I'm talking about as a state movement. I don't know what's going on in Ohio. I don't know what's going on in Utah. I don't know what's going on in Arizona. But I know what's going on in Missouri. And I know what Billy Long did. And I know what Todd Akin did. And I know what Joanne Emerson did. And we sent these people to Washington, D.C., on a promise that they would get this right. The mandate was clear. The mandate was clear when the Tea Party / movement swept into Washington, D.C. 2 years ago. The mandate was clear when we sent what we were able to send up there 4 years ago, the Akins. And the Hartzlers, and the Emersons. And listen, they screwed you every time they got a chance. Every name that I just named voted for an increase in the debt ceiling. Every name that I just named voted for the extension of the Patriot Act. Every name that I just named voted for the National Defense Authorization Act that allows the President of the United States to come and get you, because the Homeland Security has you on a list of potential domestic terrorists and detain you indefinitely without telling anyone where you're at or why you're being detained. Every one of those people that I just named voted to extend the payroll tax. So let them be out there on the campaign trail saying they didn't. I'm telling you they did. I'm telling you that I am not one bit scared that you go do the research. I encourage you to do that. I encourage you not to take any candidate's word as much as I encourage you not to take my word. Go do the research. Look up the votes. So when I say this is our pass-fail, we sent those people to Washington, D.C., and we told them, you get this right, or we'll fire you just as quickly as we fired the person that you're replacing. Just as quickly as we fired Ike Skelton, we'll fire you. And if we don't keep our word and fire these people, then we fail. Then we're going to fail. If we don't keep our word and replace these people, and listen, I know almost nothing about John Brunner. He's been kind of an enigma. He's a businessman. I'm going to tell you that I don't like that he campaigns on creating on his job creation record, because I don't like anybody who tries to put themselves to Washington, D.C., claiming that they're going to create jobs, because that's not their job when they get to Washington, D.C. But I know that he's running against two people who have proven to us that they cannot do the job. And we have this untried person who says, I can do the job. Now, you're running a business here, brothers and sisters. These people work for you. They are your employees, and you are running a business, and you have a position to fill. And you have two people who have proven to you that they cannot do this job. And you got one guy who says, give me a shot. I can do it. You're going to keep the two people who've proven to you that they can't do the job, or you're going to give a shot to the guy who says, well, I can do that. I listened to a guy today on the radio, Nick Reed, tip of the hat, Nick Reed. He's a local morning talk show guy. And he was saying, he was ranting about people who say they hate this country. And he was ranting specifically about people who say they hate this country because we had slaves. He was hating, we hate this country because we put the Japanese in internment camps in World War II. We hate this country because of what we did to the Native Americans. And what Nick is saying is, if you hate this country for something, for our history, if you, I mean, you can hate this country because we don't feed enough poor people, or you can hate this country because we feed too many poor people. That's okay. And you can stay here and hate this country fervently because you know you have a voice to change that thing you hate. But if you're staying here in this country, whining and moaning every day that you hate this country over something that you can't change. You can't change the fact that we kept slaves 150 years ago. You can't change the fact that 85 years ago we interned Japanese. You can't change the fact that 100 years ago we decimated the Native Americans. You can't change any of that. It's history. It ought to be taught openly. As part of our history, it ought not to be. It ought to be something we're ashamed of. It ought to be something that we learn from. It ought to be something that we don't flaunt, but we don't try to hide. We don't try to apologize for it, but we acknowledge that it happened. But if you are going to run around here saying you hate America because of those things, you need to go somewhere else. You need to shut your damn mouth and go somewhere else, because you are hating us for something that you and me and 100 more years can't change. It's history. It's done. It's over. And if you hate America for something that is history, done, and over, then shut the hell up and move on. I say that because I feel the same way about people like Mitt Romney, and I feel the same way about people like John Brunner. I don't know. John Brunner gave some money to somebody that a bunch of people don't like sometime back when they were friends, and I don't know what the hell that's all about. But I'm saying that's history. that that's over, that that's done. Mitt Romney did some shitty, stupid things when he was governor of the state of Massachusetts. He did some liberal things when he was the governor of Massachusetts. He's been out of politics for a heck of a long time. In the life of a human being, he has been out of politics as long as comparably in the life of our nation, the Civil War is behind us. I wish he would just acknowledge it and go on instead of ever trying to make an excuse for it. I wish he would just acknowledge that he screwed up and move on. But he tells you that it will be different. And so stop railing and whining and saying you hate this guy over something that you nor he can change. There are plenty of things about Mitt Romney that he could change. And say you don't like him for those things. You know, he could learn to say the word donuts instead of those little treats over there. Whatever it is that you think he could change, he could give all his money to charity and not be so rich. Whatever it is you think he can change now that you want to hate him for, then hate him for it. But stop hating him over something that neither he nor you can change. Something that happened a civil war ago that has no bearing on what is going on now and what he claims he is going to do when he gets in the Oval Office. Plenty of things you can criticize him for. Plenty of things I do criticize him for. On Tuesdays, we have the Show Me Common Sense. Von Carriker comes along. Great show last night. Catch the podcast if you haven't heard it yet. Why Are You Pimping My Kid? Night Before Last. That was a great show. Von Carriker and Show Me Common Sense. Von's a different kind of show. Von's entertaining to start with, just in and of herself. You'll just love it. But Von gets down in the street with the people, the conservative people who way, she gets her hands way dirtier than we do here, talking to the people in the street who make a difference, who make a real difference, veterans with hope, bikers against child abuse, conservative movers and shakers in the streets of our American cities who go out every day and make a difference. And then on Wednesday, along comes Lisa Payne Nager with the Culture Vigilante. And Lisa's show is also different. She highlights some various patriot groups in the state. She talks with authors, and then she talks a lot about schooling and legislative initiatives that are bad, and teaches us weekly that being conservative is more than just politics. It is a culture. It's a way of life. It affects, whether you're conservative or liberal, affects everything you see. It shades everything in the world. So be sure and catch Lisa at 7 o'clock on Wednesday nights, the Culture Vigilante. And then on Fridays, we have a very, very entertaining hour called the Missouri Roundtable, where usually Lisa, Vaughn, and I at a minimum, and then anybody else that wants to come along comes along, and we kick around some things. Usually we can get into at least one or two things that we disagree on, and things can get fun. I'm Dave. Thanks for coming along. Thanks, Paul, for the excellent discussion out there in New York. I've had fun. I hope you've had fun. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Hour of Truth, and I am Dave Court.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.